Welcome to Tech News Briefing. It's Tuesday, February 3rd. I'm Belle Lin for The Wall Street Journal. Your deskmate, your boss, the colleague from across the office could all be the internal source passing off information to hackers who want to steal data from your company. We look at why so-called insider threats are on the rise and how now hackers are directly recruiting some corporate employees. Then, Brian Armstrong, the soft-spoken head of crypto exchange Coinbase, is clashing with JPMorgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon and other bank leaders over the future of finance. We look at how Armstrong has cultivated his persona to further Coinbase's agenda, why bank CEOs are fighting to keep their turf, and how the Trump administration could change the whole trajectory of both. But first, roughly 32% of all data loss incidents at organizations worldwide over the past year involved a malicious insider. That's up from 20% in 2024, according to the cybersecurity firm Proofpoint. And these malicious insiders are your everyday employees. So what's driving them to be open to assisting with cyber attacks on their own employers? WSJ cybersecurity reporter Angus Lowton is here to discuss the phenomenon. Angus, company insiders helping cybercriminals is nothing new, but what's behind this current wave of disgruntled workers who seem to be willing to risk it all?
For starters, this is a fascinating kind of story because it's an under-the-radar economic indicator of what's really happening out there on the ground. And what appears to be happening out there on the ground, at least among a lot of tech workers, is they're none too happy. There's been flat hiring, there's been flat wages, folks are getting passed over for promotions, people are getting outsourced, different AIs taking over a lot of the manual labor end of the tech stuff. So there's a lot of people who aren't too happy. And that's what makes hackers happy because they can recruit disgruntled insiders to help them with data breaches because the insiders, of course, have authorized access. And with that, they're able to get in even under the most strenuous, fortified systems, not even through a back door, just through the front door, and get out a lot of very valuable data.
And how do hackers find and recruit their targets?
This is precisely why it makes it an economic indicator, because hackers typically go on social media sites, they go on career sites like LinkedIn, even X or Facebook, and they're just looking for threads where employees are complaining about their jobs, where they're saying, I was just passed over for a promotion and just venting. And if they think they've got someone who may qualify for assisting them in these attacks, they'll reach out. At first, they won't say, hey, you want to help us break into your company. They'll just warm up with a conversation and this, that, and the other thing and say, well, look, there is a way you can make a little extra money if you want to. And we're not asking for too much. We just need this little bit of data. And then it escalates. And before you know it, they're fully willing accomplices to a pretty large data breach.
And to that point, how much is this type of threat costing companies? Can you put a dollar amount on how much this actually costs them?
That can be a little bit tricky only because of the reputational damage that these kinds of insider attacks cause. If it were just a glitch in cybersecurity or a technical issue, a digital issue that can be addressed, then that's one thing. But if your customers or what have you see that this is something bigger, a corporate culture issue or angry employees, that's a little harder to fix. So a lot of companies that get hit with an insider, malicious insider attack, don't report it. So it's tricky to get numbers on that. IBM did in their latest sort of cost of data breaches, their best estimate is it's that it's more lucrative than your average data loss. It's about $5 million. Most companies are facing costs, whether that's through the ransom, whether that's just through downtime, because you have to fix these things and address them. It can also just be loss of data, business interruptions.
That was WSJ cybersecurity reporter Angus Lowton. Are you worried about cybersecurity at your job? If you're a listener on Spotify, be sure to leave us a comment with your thoughts. Coming up, the feud between Coinbase and big consumer banks is heating up this winter, and Coinbase chief Brian Armstrong is at the center of it. That's after the break. Coinbase, the biggest crypto company in the U.S., is facing a major test over its future this week as the White House tries to foster compromise over a bill that will shape the future of everyday financial services. The problem is Coinbase and some of the largest banks in the country, including JPMorgan Chase and Bank of America, have found themselves at odds over how to approach one key area that's always been big business for big banks, consumer deposits. WSJ tech and crypto policy reporter Amrith Ramkumar joins us now to talk about this financial services showdown and how Coinbase CEO Brian Armstrong became the face of the crypto contingent. So Amrith, who exactly is Brian Armstrong and what is he like?
Brian Armstrong is the 43-year-old CEO of Coinbase, the giant crypto exchange, and he's the under-the-radar face of the U.S. crypto industry. In the United States, he's survived a lot of booms and busts over the past decade and built Coinbase into what he calls sort of an everything exchange. You can buy Bitcoin, you can also trade stocks, now you can do stuff with prediction markets. And he says his goal is to eventually be a bank replacement. And he's gotten a lot of believers in among investors. The company has a market value of something like $55 billion. And he's a staunch defender of the industry. Now he's hated by some people in the banking community who have been offended by how he's lobbying in Washington to get policies that will be friendly for Coinbase and the crypto industry.
Tell us a bit more about that tension between banks and crypto companies.
Yeah, it's like a love-hate frenemy dynamic with crypto and the banks right now. Crypto's been coming on for over a decade, and crypto companies have been saying we're the future of finance, banks should partner with us, et cetera. And banks actually have. So like JP Morgan and Citi and others do have partnerships with Coinbase and other crypto companies as well. They are sort of nibbling around the edges, wanting to maybe hedge in case crypto does take off and disrupt some of their original business. But the fight that's taking place now is interesting because it's over these rewards or annual payments Coinbase pays holders of a stablecoin offered by Circle through this very unique partnership. So a stablecoin is a dollar-backed cryptocurrency essentially designed to hold its value. Coinbase has this weird setup where they're allowed to pay holders on its platform of this Circle stablecoin rewards of, let's say, 3.5% at an annual rate. And so banks are now looking at this and saying, wait a minute, that looks a lot like what I would pay a holder in a checking account. I would pay them less than 0.1%. But now you're offering these people 3.5% to just hold their cash there, essentially. So that's created this fight that's really erupted in the last month or so in Washington.
And this tension came to a head recently at Davos, where you write that there was a confrontation between Armstrong and JPMorgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon. Tell us what happened.
So in mid-January, there was supposed to be a markup, a committee vote by the Senate Banking Committee on this market structure bill. This bill has been in the works for years, but they could not agree on several key things. Probably most importantly, this banking versus crypto fight over whether Coinbase and crypto exchanges can pay holders of stablecoins rewards. And so the day before the markup, Brian Armstrong had a bunch of meetings with senators, and he did not like the bill text. So Armstrong puts out on social media, on X, he says, Coinbase can't support this bill because of these reasons. So the committee then cancels the vote several hours later, and it's not really clear what the path is to get back on track. Armstrong blowing up the vote like that was seen as really a shot across the bow at the banking industry and even some people in the White House. So then the following week, Armstrong flies to Davos to try to make peace. And at one point, he's talking to former UK Prime Minister Tony Blair. And then Jamie Dimon of JPMorgan Chase comes up and interrupts and gets pretty heated and tells Armstrong he's full of shit. Armstrong had also been going on TV saying that banks were trying to ban their competition with this lobbying fight and that essentially implying banks were sort of being anti-innovation. And Jamie Dimon and others had a big problem with that.
Where do you think that the Trump administration is likely to fall in the determination of where this legislation goes. Do you have any sense for what David Sacks, Trump's AI and crypto czar, will land in all of this?
It's a really interesting question because they're very close to Coinbase and they talk regularly and they know that Coinbase is critical to the ecosystem. But David Sacks is also a venture capitalist, and a lot of the smaller crypto companies need this bill to pass. Just the core regulatory clarity that the SEC will oversee these parts of the ecosystem and the CFTC will oversee these other parts. That is very meaningful for a large part of this ecosystem. So you can see a world where Sacks and others are torn because they don't want Coinbase to have to sort of fall on the sword here, but they really need this bill to pass. It is probably the biggest portion of Trump's crypto agenda that's outstanding.
That was WSJ tech and crypto policy reporter Amrith Ramkumar. And that's it for Tech News Briefing. If you're a listener on Spotify, be sure to take this episode's poll or leave us a comment. Today's show was produced by Julie Chang with supervising producer Katie Ferguson. Logging off, I'm Belle Lin for The Wall Street Journal. We'll be back later this morning with TNB Tech Minute. Thanks for listening.